Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. That's especially helpful for folks outside our listening area. You may enjoy some of our shows here and want to share that with your friends and loved ones. It's very easy to listen online. Welcome to the show. Today is April 8th, 2015. The markets were up today. The Dow closing at 17,902, the NASDAQ at 4950, and the S&P at 2081. Last week, I had attorney Buddy Lesovoy on, and we discussed legal issues affecting startups, new businesses, small businesses, and LLCs, and the different kinds of business structure. I have already had several questions about business structures and setting up a business this week, and I just refer folks to the podcast available on WDIY. So if you have a business, we're thinking about setting up a business, that is what we talked about last week, and podcasts are available at wdiy.org and also at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can just look for the title of the show, I think, was You, Inc., and it was with Buddy Lesovoy. So thank you, Buddy, for being here last week. He was like a star, so I appreciate his coming on. We had lots of phone calls. That was last week. Wow, time goes so fast. Tonight, we are talking taxes again. It's kind of tax season wrap-up because I'm not going to be here next week. Next week's April 15th, so I won't be here. So it is our tax season wrap-up tonight. If you do have final questions, you're welcome to call. The phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. But I'm also going to talk about what we learned during this tax season, some things definitely to pay attention to help you out next year and throughout the year, and also to help out folks who may still be working on taxes or maybe not having enjoyed the experience so much this year. Maybe you'll get some ideas to make it a better experience for yourself next year. All right, so that's what we're talking about, tax season wrap-up and what we learned. We will take your questions, again, at the phone number 610-758-8810. We are live. Judy Ann is in the studio, and she will answer the calls. If you'd like to talk live on air, we can do that. And if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Judy Ann. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio, and I'll do my best to answer it. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I do typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. I'll do my best to answer them. So the phone number is 610-758-8810 or through email at yourfinancialchoices.com. One of the first things I want to talk about, and I've mentioned this on a few other shows because it's very, very, very important, and it's important that you share this information with, you know, loved ones, your young adults, or your elderly folks who might not know better about the IRS scams. They are continuing, folks, and people are getting better and better at them, and it's very confusing for even the most sophisticated of taxpayers. So you really want to make sure that you're sharing this information with those around you that may be impacted about not responding to what we will call IRS scams. The IRS will never call demanding payment. They will never call demanding money for the taxes owed. So there is more information on the IRS's website, irs.gov, And it talks about the scams, IRS impersonations on the telephone. Let me just go over that a little bit so that I can further explain this better. An aggressive and sophisticated phone scam targeting taxpayers, including recent immigrants, has been making the rounds throughout the country. Callers claim to be employees of the IRS, but are not. These con artists can sound convincing when they call. They use fake names and bogus IRS identification badge numbers. They may know a lot about their targets, and they usually alter the caller ID to make it look like the IRS is calling. Victims are told they owe money to the IRS and it must be paid promptly through a preloaded debit card or wire transfer. If the victim refuses to cooperate, they are then threatened with arrest, deportation, or suspension of a business or driver's license. And in many cases, the caller becomes hostile and insulting. Victims may be told they have a refund due to try to trick them into sharing private information. If the phone isn't answered, the scammers often leave an urgent callback request. Note that the IRS will never call to demand immediate payment, nor will the agency call about taxes owed without first having mailed you a bill. They won't demand that you pay taxes without giving you the opportunity to question or appeal the amount they say you owe. Number three, they won't require you to use a specific payment method for your taxes. Number four, they won't ask for credit or debit card numbers over the phone. Or five, threaten to bring in local police or other law enforcement groups to have you arrested for not paying. So please be diligent about watching out for that. It's very important not to be taken in by IRS scams. The reason I mentioned sharing that information with your young adults, if you have children, young adult children, elderly, because number one, the elderly tend to get a little bit more confused sometimes about what is happening, and they might not understand the technology and how things have changed. So you want to make sure that your grandparents or your elderly parents aren't taking those kinds of phone calls and reacting to them. And for folks with young adults, maybe just in the workforce, parents, please mention to them as well that they should not be taken in by this, because they might not know better if it's the first time they're filing, second or third time they're filing. They may not understand how this works. So make sure you share that information. It's also good to point out, even to elderly folks, to avoid scams where you have callers calling and saying, you know, they're crying and they're a grandson and they need money and the police are here. I've had a number of clients who've had those phone calls too, and they make themselves so irrational with the crying that you can't understand their voice and you think it could be your grandchild. So be careful of that as well. All right, folks, if you have questions tonight, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We're doing a tax season wrap-up and talking about what we learned. IRS scams were one of them, so please be cautious. Number two, check your documents. When you are gathering all your tax information for tax preparation, you want to make sure that you had collected all your tax documents. If you hadn't done this year, make sure you do it for next year. Have a folder in your file cabinet, or if you use electronic information, a folder on your computer, to start collecting and gathering all your tax information. Between January and sometimes even into February and March, you could receive tax information in the mail, and the envelopes are all marked important tax information enclosed. So you know that you need that for your tax return. Let me mention that some people who have set up electronic delivery of, for example, investment statements or online payments for their mortgage, they may not get that tax document in the mail. You may forget about it, because if you didn't get it in the mail and you always got it in the mail in the past, you might have not realized that you didn't receive some important tax information. Usually when you've set up for any kind of online access or electronic delivery, you will have a folder or a tab within that system to go get tax documents, important tax documents. So you don't want to miss getting those. All right, we're going to talk more about tax season wrap up and what we learned. If you have questions, you're welcome to call. You are my guest tonight, listeners. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
And welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices here on WDIY. If you have questions this evening about taxes, for example, we are talking about tax season wrap-up and what we learned. The phone number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. There still may be many people who have not filed their tax returns. So if you are one of them and you had a question holding you up, you're welcome to give us a call and we'll see if we can help. We were just talking about IRS scams to avoid them, avoid those phone calls, and making sure that you gather all your documents. So if you have electronic delivery of or electronic payment of things like your mortgage, make sure that you go grab those documents that may be online. So that could apply to your investment accounts. It could apply to mortgages. I recently had a client who didn't send me his mortgage statement and thought, you know, oh, do you have to have that? Didn't realize, well, it was a big deduction, a $14,000 deduction. So you don't want to miss things like that. So make sure that you're gathering those documents that may be online. So just because you didn't get a paper copy does not mean you did not get that tax document. If you had missed something, let's say, oh, shoot, Lori just had a good point. I missed that mortgage. Or here's a case where I see people miss some mortgage interest deductions is when you refinance and you go to a new company. Sometimes you forget that you had, you know, mortgage interest with Bank A because you went with Bank B like for the majority of the year. So you want to make sure that you have all of your mortgage statements for the year as well. Don't miss that. But let's say you did miss it. And if you missed it and you would have benefited from a deduction, you can always amend your return. So I'll talk about that in just a minute. We did have a call come in from Astria in Hellertown, and she said she recently filed on TurboTax. She got married over the summer. She currently takes zero on the W-4. And the husband is zero or one. What should my husband and I change our W-4s to for the next year so we don't owe as much money? This is a great question. And actually, this is one I should have thought of for tax season wrap-up and what we learned, because I've actually had this question a number of times this tax season. We do especially see changes when folks get married. Let me explain what this is talking about. When you go to work at a job and you have an employer and they're going to withhold your federal tax, you fill out a form called a W-4. And the W-4 tells your employer what your filing status is and how many dependent exemptions or exemptions you're going to have on your tax return. That's because, for example, if you're single and you make $50,000 a year and you can claim yourself, they go to a booklet. It's called the employer withholding. Well, it's probably not a booklet these days. It's probably all electronic, but they go to a table that says, here, for someone making $50,000 who gets paid maybe weekly, biweekly, monthly, however you get paid, you make $50,000 with this pay period with one exemption and this filing status. Here's the amount that they have to withhold from your pay. Well, what happens is if you, that withholding for someone who's single, $50,000 is one thing. If now you get married and now you've married someone and you are, one's making, you know, $150,000 and the other one's making $50,000 and now you're married filing joint, your filing status has changed and your income level has changed. But your employer doesn't know this. Your employer just knows you're making $50,000 and maybe they withhold, you know, it's based on the tables. Maybe it's an effective tax rate of 12%. But when you put your money with your $150,000 spouse, your effective tax rate might be more like 22%. So you're going to be under withheld. You may not be able to make this all up just by filling out that W-4 with your proper filing status. So, Astria, in your example, you might say, well, I'll go fill out my W-4 and I will now say I'm married filing joint one each. But in your case, as you said, maybe you didn't have enough withheld that way because one exemption each, while we each get an exemption when you add your income with your husband's, is in my example, it puts you into a different tax bracket. So you could use your W-4 and say married filing joint, but withhold at the higher single rate with zero exemptions. That will make them withhold more. It still might not be enough. So you really have to kind of go through a worksheet to figure it out to see if you have other deductions, like do you itemize? Do you have real estate tax deduction, mortgage interest deduction, charitable contributions, that if you itemize, that kind of counts towards those exemptions or how much you might be able to claim. So it's a little bit of work, but quite often I'll see dual earners who might claim withhold at the higher single rate and zero exemptions, but that may not cover it all. You really have to go through the worksheet to get it exact. But this would be a step in the right direction to at least get a little bit higher withholding. Okay, so Astria, thanks for that call. That was a great question, and I hate that it has to be so complicated, but it is. Oh, but what I was going to add is on the W-4, you can always add an additional amount to withhold. So there is a line item on the W-4 that says withhold, you know, so much per pay period. So if you're getting paid weekly or monthly, you'd want to adjust for that. So if in your case, your income's going to be all the same, and maybe you ended up owing $1,000 at the end of this year, one of you or both of you could divvy that up and have that extra amount taken out of your pay as well. Okay, so thanks for that. If folks, you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. So we talked about having all the proper documents. And if you don't have the proper documents and you found out that you missed them because maybe they were electronic or you just didn't realize what, you know, you needed, you can file an amended return. You have 3 years to file an amended return. Typically, if you missed reported income, the IRS is probably going to catch it and send you a letter. So that if you don't file an amended return, they may get to you before you would file one. If you file the amended return first, typically what I see is the IRS doesn't charge penalties. You know, if you're forthright and come forward and kind of catch it first, they're not going to charge penalties if you amend the return, you know, within that 3-year period. If they catch it, then they may charge penalties for underpayment or late payment and things like that. As far as documents go, the other thing you want to make sure, it's not just electronic documents that you may miss. You may miss information that is on some of the documents that you have. And maybe if you're using a tax preparer to prepare your returns, or maybe you're sitting in front of your computer filling out the tax forms, you may not realize all those numbers on those subsequent pages or that supplemental information. That may be important information. So I'm going to talk about some of that extra information that's on some of those tax documents that you want to pay attention to when we come back from our next break. So if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And when we come back, we'll take the call that just came in. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
I'm Melissa Block with NPR News. Okay, I know pledge drives aren't the reason you listen to WDIY, but I bet you want to support WDIY and help pay for the news you use. So please, make your donation today. Help WDIY pay for the news and keep fund drives short. Please visit WDIY.org and give as generously as you can. Thanks.
And we are back. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and we have a caller on line two. Steve, can you hear me? Hello, Steve. Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good. How can I help you?
I have a question that is geared towards being a 1099 employee and trying to squirrel away the money to pay taxes at the end of the year.
Okay.
But I happen to have won a lot of money on a game show.
Oh, cool. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. What does one do if they don't have the available money to pay the taxes in the given year?
Okay. Well, a couple things. You said a couple different things there, and I just want to clarify a couple things, which is great.
Sure.
When people call in live, because then I can ask you questions back. A 1099 employee is not an employee. Typically, when someone receives
right.
a 1099, they're an independent contractor.
That's
and you're
correct.
Technically
you're right.
self-employed. That's okay. This is for, you know, other people who are listening too. So you're self-employed. So typically, you're going to file in the simplest of forms a Schedule C. And if you have expenses, you're going to want to make sure that you have documented all those so that you get the benefit of those deductions to reduce some of that tax due that you're going to have. So you want to watch for that. And typically what I tell folks to set aside when they're independent contractors, self-employed people, I typically tell them to set aside about 40%. And you might think, wow, 40% sounds like a lot of money. Well, 40% will cover your self-employment tax, which is Social Security tax, and you're having to pay both sides of it. You're paying the employee portion and the employer portion. So you want to watch out for that. Then you have federal income tax, state income tax, and local income tax. And you may or may not want to fund a retirement account. And here's, Steve, where you can kind of adjust some of the taxes that might be due, is that if you are self-employed and you have other income available, now you're saying you may not have the money to pay the taxes, so you might not have the money to put into a retirement account either. But sometimes what folks do is they can help shelter some of their income that they earned by putting some of it into a retirement account, and that might reduce your taxes. So you kind of keep your money, but it's in a retirement account. As far as the prize that you won, so prizes are typically, you probably received a 1099 for that as well, and you get a 1099 miscellaneous for that. Here's where you have to be careful, and in a little bit in the show, I was going to talk about the shortfalls of using software and kind of preparing returns on your own, is you have to make sure that the software understands what it is you're reporting. Because a prize is not the same as your 1099 miscellaneous for your self-employment income on Schedule C. The prize might be 1099 miscellaneous other income, and that's typically page one income. You want to make sure that when you're doing your taxes that you're not charging self-employment tax on that. It's separately reported, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So let's now come to your question. So you have your self-employment income, you have this prize all on page one, you have your itemized deductions or your standard deduction, your exemption, you come up with the tax due plus your self-employment tax. And now let's say you owe $10,000 and your prize wasn't so great. Your prize was a car and you don't have any money, you know, something
right.
like that. There is an installment plan that you can request with the IRS. And I don't recall the form off the top of my head. I think it begins with a 9. But there is an installment plan you can request. You can do it at the time you're filing your tax return. If it's $50,000 or less, you can, I think, do it right with your return. If it's $50,000 or more, it could be a little bit more complicated. You can request the amount that you think you can make. So if you can make $100 a month payment or $200 a month payment, you fill out that form saying what you think you're capable of paying, and then you'll get something from them in the mail saying whether they agree to it or accept it.
Interesting. Thank you very much.
Yeah. I hope that helps. But just make sure that if you're self-employed in particular, that you've also accounted for all of your deductions, because don't pay more tax than, you know, you would be required to if you had things like mileage or insurance or, you know, tax preparation fees from the prior year or advertising or website, telephone use, you know. So make sure you look at the Schedule C for expense ideas, okay?
Very good. Thank you.
All right, Steve. Have a good night. Thank you for calling. We had several other calls come in off air. Let me see if I can get to some of these before I have the break. Jackie from Bethlehem. I wonder if that's someone I know. After I filed, I received a Schedule K related to my IRA, which I have never taken money out of. Do I need to do anything with it? Jackie, great question. And this is a one of those what we learned from tax season. We had folks bringing in K-1s for investments that they had in their IRA, worrying that, oops, this came in after I filed my tax return. Typically, the K-1 for investments that you have in your IRA, typically it's not going to be reportable. The only time you have to worry is if there's something called unrelated business income. So you don't normally have to worry about that with a K-1 from an investment that's in your IRA. So what you want to look at on your K-1 when it comes in is it'll say, there's a section that says what type of entity, and it will say either individual or trust or IRA, KEO, SEP, that type of description. So when you get those in the mail, look at those and see if it's going to apply or not. Typically not if it's for your IRA. That was a great question, Jackie. Thank you for calling that in. We had Jim call in, off air, and he said, if I'm a resident of the Valley but work in New Jersey and have a rental in New Jersey, I filed a Pennsylvania return. Do I need to file a New Jersey return? Okay, so he's a resident in the Lehigh Valley. He works in New Jersey, which means he has a W-2. And I'm writing some things down. And he has a rental in New Jersey. Yes, he should file a return for New Jersey. Whenever you have real estate in any state, I will have clients file tax returns. Now, sometimes the rental might be at a loss. And so maybe the software will say that you don't have to file a return. But I typically will encourage folks to file tax returns where they have rental properties, because sometimes you have passive losses that aren't going to be allowed. So maybe every year in your other state, the state other than your resident state, has a loss, and you sell it in year 10 and you sell it at a gain. Sometimes those losses get freed up and you're able to offset some of those losses against gains. We don't have that in Pennsylvania, but it could apply in other states. So I would have you file a return in New Jersey. And Jim, as far as your W-2, Pennsylvania and New Jersey are reciprocal states. So if you are working in New Jersey, your employer is probably withholding Pennsylvania income tax and Pennsylvania and reporting Pennsylvania wages, so that you wouldn't have to file the New Jersey return just for that. Okay, so great calls, great questions. I have a few more. We have a question that is live, but I'm feel like we're going to the break, and I want to wait, Mark, if you could just hold on the line, Mark, because your question might take longer than the minute that I have before my break, so I want to make sure that I can get to you. And then Lee also called in and asked about Schedule B for Pennsylvania returns. Lee, this is something I was definitely going to talk about tonight, because Pennsylvania changed what the interest and dividend schedules look like on Pennsylvania. And it's been an absolute nightmare for us using software, preparers using software. It's been a nightmare. So I will talk about Schedule B for Pennsylvania returns when I'm assuming that's the interest schedule, Schedule B, when I come back from Aaron after I take Mark's question as well. Neil, we'll go to a quick break. And when we come back, Mark, hang on. We'll take your question then. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Our spring membership drive runs April 10th through the 22nd. Visit WDIY.org and make your donation today. If we raise $17,000 by April 10th, we will push back the start of our spring pledge drive by 3 days. That will give us a pledge-free weekend. Visit WDIY.org and make your donation today. Supporting WDIY is quick, easy, and safe. Visit WDIY.org. Make your donation today and enjoy more of the programs you love. Thanks.
And we are back with your financial choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and I have Mark on line one with a question. Mark, can you hear me? Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. I love these questions coming in. It's my favorite part of the show. So how can I help you?
I am a Lehigh Valley resident. Mm-hmm. I guess my question is more of a question for next tax year rather than this year.
Okay.
But I will be receiving an inheritance this year from a relative who lived in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
I am wondering if that inheritance will be taxable for either federal or Pennsylvania purposes next year.
It kind of depends, so I'm glad you called and called in live. What happens, Mark, is typically when we receive an inheritance that's considered what I'll call like principal, like let's say this was Aunt Clara and she had $100,000 in the bank and you have now inherited $100,000. The $100,000 isn't going to be income taxable to you for federal or state purposes. But if while it was in Aunt Clara's estate, they had it in a bank account and the $100,000 earned $100 and you're the only beneficiary and there were no other expenses, then it could be that you may inherit that $100 of income as well as your $100,000, and that income might be taxable to you. So what happens is there's a number of different kinds of things you could inherit. Things like cash, real estate taxes would have a similar explanation of what I just went through. If you inherit an IRA, a taxable account like an IRA or an annuity that might have some taxable feature to it, those kinds of assets are called income in respect of a decedent, and they retain their tax characteristics that the original owner had. So if Aunt Clara had a $100,000 IRA that you've now inherited, if you cashed it out, then it's going to be reportable for you for federal purposes, not for Pennsylvania purposes, because we don't tax IRAs, but for federal purposes, it would be included. So I don't know if you want to share more about what kind of asset you inherited, but there are different kinds of elements to it. The set other pieces is if it is actually, there's different ways to inherit. You can inherit as a named beneficiary, or you can inherit through the estate. So if you inherit through the estate itself is going to file an income tax return, and there may be deductions like legal fees, tax preparation fees for the estate.
Mm-hmm.
And then when that all washes through, back to my example of Aunt Clara with $100,000 cash in the bank and they earned $100 of interest, if I had $5,000 of legal fees on that estate, then I'm going to have something called excess deductions. And whoever is preparing the estate income tax return would say, Mark's the only beneficiary. He is inheriting everything, Aunt Clara's $100,000 plus the $100 of income. But we had $5,000 of expenses. And so you would actually get a deduction, possibly, for inheriting. So that was kind of a fast way to tell you some of the nuances. So it's not necessarily that it'll be subject to income tax, but it could be depending on what kind of asset you're inheriting. So you have to know if it's an income in respect of a decedent kind of asset, like an IRA or annuity income. That's typically what we see would have that taxation.
No, it's actually going to be the first scenario you described. It's, in fact, literally, it's the money left in a specific named bank account in the will, and I am a named beneficiary.
Oh, very good. Now, if you're named directly on the account, like a payable on death kind of a thing, it doesn't even have to go through the estate. You can use a I'm not giving legal advice here. I have to give my little disclaimer, but you know, you could contact the bank and with a death certificate, probably take the account over. If there are inheritance taxes in whatever state a decedent passes, someone has to be responsible for inheritance taxes if they apply at that level. But you know, I forgot what state you said this was,
and Massachusetts.
I'm not sure if they have inheritance tax up there.
Oh, so there could be inheritance taxes payable to Massachusetts.
Right. And that's typically the executor's responsibility to, you know, marshal the assets and determine if there is some reporting requirement there.
Okay. So if it's possibly not taxable for me for federal or state purposes, will there still be some type of form that I will need to fill out that basically says I received inheritance, but there's no tax to it?
No.
Or do you just not report it at all?
Yeah, no. Typically what would happen is if it went through the estate is going to file an income tax return, and they'll let you know if there's any income that, you know, you're going to be required to report.
Okay.
If it was something like a joint bank account that went directly to you, then sometimes the bank will just automatically send you a 1099 for any interest income earned on it. But, check with someone if there was an executor appointed, touch base with them. And if there's an attorney appointed, you'd want to check that out as well, if there's any other requirements that you have. But if it sounds like what we just went through, it sounds pretty basic. But double check just to make sure. Because let me give you one other caution, Mark, just because of our listeners. I've had folks who say, the estate already paid the tax on it. And people get confused sometimes when there's an estate. They'll think, the tax was already paid. And then they receive a $100,000 IRA and they cash it in and they think all the taxes were paid. And that's not the case. The inheritance tax might have been paid, for example, in Pennsylvania. But then if it's an income in respect of a decedent kind of asset, as I've described the IRA being, then that would be income taxable to the extent someone takes it out.
Right.
So I'd never encourage that. I say keep it in a beneficiary IRA. So that's a whole nother show. But Mark, I hope that helped.
That helps very much. I appreciate your help.
Great. Have a great night. Thanks.
Thank you, too.
Bye-bye. Lee had called off air earlier, and she had asked about explaining Schedule B for PA returns. She and her spouse both have exempt interest dividends. Exempt interest dividends, folks, means it's tax exempt for federal purposes. And Lee, earlier when I was talking about making sure you have documents, one of the things I was also going to say was make sure you have every page of your documents, because here's the thing. When you look and you see exempt dividends or interest on your brokerage statement, it means it's exempt for federal purposes. It does not mean it's exempt for Pennsylvania purposes. So let's pretend you have $1,000 of tax-exempt municipal income. You invested in municipal bonds, and they're federally tax-free. We don't know if they're tax-free for Pennsylvania or not until we look to see what the investment is. If the investment is a PA Muni bond fund, then typically that PA Muni bond fund won't be taxable for Pennsylvania if it's 100% invested in Pennsylvania municipals. That would be not taxable for federal or Pennsylvania. But if it's a municipal bond fund and the brokerage firm or the investment company, the fund company, provides a listing of the percent that fund is invested in Pennsylvania, it might say 5% of it is invested in Pennsylvania. So in my example of $1,000, 5% is $50. What we're going to see is $1,000 of tax-exempt interest on federal. But on Pennsylvania, we're going to see $950 of taxable income on Pennsylvania. Here's the real rub this year. the schedules are different on Pennsylvania this year. If you're using software, it's very complicated for these exempt dividends, because this Pennsylvania is now saying report the interest and dividends per your federal schedule. So per your federal return, you have to use those numbers that were on your federal return. And then you make adjustments, you know. And the trick is Pennsylvania splits the taxpayer and the spouse. They really need to rework the whole entire tax structure as far as I am concerned in the tax reporting. It is way too confusing and too complicated. So what happens, folks, is we're individual tax filers for Pennsylvania if we're married. The taxpayer is a tax filer. The spouse is a tax filer. You may have joint accounts. So you have all these schedules that Pennsylvania now is splitting all the income on different schedules. You have the taxpayer schedule, the joint schedule, the spouse schedule. It's very hard to tie them in together. So Lee, you want me to explain it, but I'm telling you it's very complicated. So what I have done is I basically say, here's what I know I want the number to be on Pennsylvania. Here's what I know. So in my example of $1,000 of tax-exempt dividends for federal, and I know that $950 is taxable for Pennsylvania, I make sure that my bottom line ends up being the right number I need. It's all about how you pull those numbers over. And if you're using software, good luck. But there isn't a subtraction and an addition line item on this new Schedule B's, I believe, to help make those adjustments. What's confusing about it is you have the number per the federal, and then you add and subtract and add it back. I mean, it's very confusing. So I wish I could be more specific. I don't have a schedule in front of me, but I will tell you that it is complicated, and Pennsylvania has not made it easier for us. They've made it harder. But folks really do need to be aware of what is considered exempt for Pennsylvania and what is not. It just because it's tax-free for federal does not mean it's tax-free for Pennsylvania. Okay, so that brings us to asking about all those other forms that you see in your packages that you get. Folks, if you have questions, we still have plenty of time. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. When you get your package from your brokerage house, a lot of times there'll be all this extra literature. And for the most part, a lot of the extra literature is just, you know, junk and garbage and disclosures and compliance. But occasionally, there's very important papers in there, which include those percentages I mentioned when you're looking at municipal investments. There will also, from time to time, be schedules of U.S. Treasury interest. And you might wonder, what is that about or what is that for? Well, if you have a mutual fund that invests in U.S. Treasuries, that is also tax-free for Pennsylvania. Sometimes it's hardly worth going through the calculations, but occasionally you will find a fund that has a big chunk invested in U.S. Treasuries. Sometimes people are in U.S. government money market accounts and things like that. So if you had, you know, $200 in a, you know, U.S. Treasury bond fund or something, then the percent that is deemed to be U.S. Treasury, which would be exempt for state purposes, this isn't just Pennsylvania, it's any state if you've invested in U.S. Treasuries, is exempt for state purposes. So you might have $200 of interest on your federal return, and you might have $2 on your Pennsylvania return. So it's the opposite of those munis that I was just talking about that aren't invested in Pennsylvania. Okay? There's a reason for those papers. Another extra supplemental information that sometimes comes after the regular tax season is something called original issue discount, OID. So if you're one of those folks who got your return done really, really early and you buy things like bonds that have discounts and premiums when you're buying bonds, if that OID information came after you filed your tax return and that original issue discount interest is reportable and it came after, then you can file an amended return if it's, you know, if it's material you want to file an amended return to make sure you include that. So that's something that folks could miss from time to time. So when we come back, I'll talk a little bit more about watching out for using some of the popular tax software. Remember, this is talking about tax season wrap up and what we learned this tax season and what you want to watch out for next tax season. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Thanks for tuning in to Your Financial Choices. Lehigh Valley weather. It's 41 degrees with cloudy skies, light drizzle. Tonight, there's a chance of rain or drizzle with a low around 38. Thursday, there's a chance of rain and drizzle again, and a high near 45 degrees with some wind kicking up. Then Thursday night, rain or drizzle, likely cloudy with a low around 40. Friday is where the wind really starts to kick up, a chance of showers and possibly some thunderstorms after 3 p.m., an adjusted new high near 71, breezy, with wind that could gust up to 31 miles per hour. Friday night, showers and thunderstorms, then a chance of showers all going on to the early morning next day. And then Saturday, mostly sunny with a high near 60, and Sunday, sunny with a high near 66. This is WDIY, Your Financial Choices. Lori Siebert, our host tonight, and your operator, Neil Heaver, and I filled in all my taxes. I'm all done, by the way.
I am too, actually.
Yeah. Hooray.
I'm normally doing it on April 15th, right before midnight, because I always feel like I have to do everybody else first.
I'm not doing that anymore.
But this year I had to because my son's going to college and my husband wanted one done. So,
Good.
Folks, if you have questions, there's still time. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We're doing tax season wrap up and what we learned. About the popular tax software, what you have to be careful of, folks, is it doesn't know you, and it's not necessarily asking you all the personal questions that may relate to your specific situation. So if you have a 1099, for example, a 1099-R for a retirement account, and you're 55, and you put it into the software, your employer issued you the 1099-R. There's an exception to the 10% penalty because maybe you were terminated from employment at age 55. You were 55 by the end of the year. So there's an exception to the early withdrawal on your distribution from your retirement plan. The software, you know, you've entered it properly. It might report it properly on the federal. You want to make sure it's not subject to a 10% penalty. But Pennsylvania may not know what to do with it in the software because Pennsylvania knows that you're supposed to be 59 and a half as well. And they may include it in your taxable income. So you want to watch for those little things. Just because it may have picked it up correctly for federal does not mean it's picked it up correctly for Pennsylvania. And just because those codes are in those tax documents doesn't mean they're always right either. So you want to make sure that not only you're gathering all the proper tax documents and that you had that apply to you, but also that they look correct. One of the other items you want to really kind of scrutinize or watch out for is cost basis on your 1099Bs from your brokerage firms, because sometimes they may not have the exact right information. I've seen this happen with inheritances. When someone has inherited stock, mutual funds, there's something called a step up in basis. If your brokerage house doesn't realize it was an inherited asset, they may not be picking up the correct cost basis. It could be wrong, and they could be reporting it to the IRS incorrectly. The IRS does give us an opportunity to code our tax returns to say incorrect holding period or incorrect basis. So you want to make sure that you're looking at those documents to make sure it looks reasonable or correct. All right. So watch out for software. Watch out for cost basis. We talked about the Pennsylvania interest and dividend reconciliation, Lee. That was on my list. Investment expenses for folks who pay asset management fees or investment expenses on their investments. Schedule A, itemized deductions. It's a miscellaneous itemized deduction. Be careful because you can't deduct everything if you're paying asset management fees for retirement accounts and the fees are coming out of the retirement accounts. You cannot take a deduction for that because you're not paying tax on that when it comes out of the account. So it's like tax-free. You cannot take a deduction for that. And also you have to allocate your investment expenses to taxable and tax-exempt income so that if you have a portfolio that's 50% municipal bonds and 50% mutual funds and you pay $10,000 in asset management fees, you only could deduct half of that. $5,000 on Schedule A. You can't allocate it to tax-exempt income. A big thing we're seeing more and more of is foreign income and foreign income reporting, as well as folks who are invested even in mutual funds that have some element of foreign income and foreign taxes. So these are two different things, but you have to be very, very careful. So if you are working with a broker and you're going into some investments, emerging markets, there may be some element of your investments that pay you a dividend that have a foreign tax on that dividend. Well, that is not having like a foreign account yourself individually that you're controlling in a foreign country. You're just going through your domestic broker and buying international type mutual funds and stocks. That has foreign taxes. That is eligible for a foreign tax credit. Software sometimes will put it automatically on Schedule A as a tax deduction on Schedule A, but that's just a deduction. It's not a dollar for dollar tax offset. So you want to make sure if you do pay foreign taxes that you're filling out a form 1116 and calculating what your foreign tax credit will be relating to that foreign income. But there are even more stricter rules and cautions regarding foreign income. If you are investing yourself in foreign investments abroad and not going domestically, you've opened up a bank account. Maybe you're from a foreign country originally and you open up accounts there and you have investments there. If you are a U.S. citizen or resident and we're filing U.S. returns and reporting all of our foreign information, you have to do special forms. There's a form 8938, depending on how big your account was or how much in assets you have that you're holding foreign in foreign countries. And if you have foreign bank accounts, a form 114. The IRS is getting very strict on this, and the banking industry also is getting very strict. The form 114 used to be called the FBAR. It was the TD 90.22, I think, and now it's called the form 114. So you want to make sure if you have any foreign income other than, you know, what I previously described, foreign income, direct foreign income, signature authority on foreign accounts, you want to make sure you're doing the proper reporting of those depending on the amounts you have and your filing status, because it varies if you're single or married filing joint. Another thing that some folks might not be aware of that some people learned for the first time, I knew this, is that if you are older and you are still working, some folks, you know, might be in their 70s and they're working, and they know that if they're working and they're over 70, they can't put money into an IRA. Well, did you know you could put money into a Roth IRA? So there is no age limitation on Roth IRAs. So for those folks who are still picking up those odd jobs to keep themselves busy, and you're over age 70 and a half, know that you could still do a Roth IRA, or at least be eligible to do a Roth IRA if you're within the income limitations and various requirements for that. Something to consider. Roth IRA, I think, is a great idea for young people because I think it could be emergency reserves. And for older people who are in their retirement years, I think it's a great estate planning tool to be able to pass on an asset to your loved ones if that is something you're interested in doing. A Roth IRA is a great vehicle for that as well. It's like a tax-free, income tax-free gift, still subject to inheritance tax, but income tax-free. If you are someone who is within the income limits, and it's too much to talk about tonight, but be aware of it. If you are earning money, you don't have any other kind of retirement plan, you can still do IRA contributions up until April 15th for the previous year. So for folks who had income, maybe you're within the income limits and you have some extra money, you could consider putting up to $6,500 if you're over age 50 into a IRA for a tax deduction, or a Roth IRA for no tax deduction, but you have until April 15th to do that for the prior year. Folks, you need to watch out for W-2s when you're giving them to tax preparers, or if you're preparing your own tax return. When you look at the W-2s and you get like two pages of W-2s and you think, oh, they're all the same, they certainly look all the same. Well, look a little bit more carefully because they may not be all the same. I recently had someone who had Pennsylvania wages on one W-2, and in a page he did not give me, which I don't recall why I had asked him for more. I think because the Pennsylvania wages looked a little off. I said, you know, was there more to this W-2? And we found out that the rest of the story was the W-2 was the employer had reported all of his wages as New York wages. So if I had not seen that W-2, we may have filed the return incorrectly. So be careful what you think you're seeing. Look at those with great scrutiny. You want to make sure that your employer is withholding properly for whatever state of residency you're in or where your work is. Now, New York is a little funny. You know, they want to tax everything in New York. So you want to watch if you're working for a New York employer because they will put all New York wages. Here's a big thing for those folks who are Pennsylvania residents who are working in New York. If you have a New York employer, if you work outside of the state, and I'm not talking about working out of your home for the convenience of yourself, but if you actually are going off on, you know, calls in other, you know, other states, other places, maybe you're on a call in Pennsylvania, you know, 30 days out of the year. Doesn't sound like much, but what happens if you're working for a New York employer and you're based in New York, you're going to have New York wages and New York tax. You get a credit or an allocation for the days you're not working in New York. So you definitely want to keep track of any days that you're working outside of New York because it can make a huge difference on your tax return. Huge difference. But again, it's not on vacation and it's not weekends and it's not sick days and it's not working out of your home for your own convenience. I am talking about you actually working on days outside of New York. So watch out for that. Multi-state returns have been incredible this year. We're just seeing a lot of folks moving. Please keep good records on the days you've moved. Keep your pay stubs so you know how to allocate the income between whether it's moving from one state to another or even local returns. You want to keep a pay stub so you know how to allocate your income to the different tax authorities. It's a bit of a nightmare when people move and we have to kind of split the income because sometimes folks aren't notifying their employer timely. So that's another takeaway from tax season and what we learned. If you move, go in and tell your employer right away and say, listen, I am no longer in, you know, Pennsylvania. I now live in New Jersey or vice versa, or I no longer live in Upper Macungie. I now live in the city of Allentown. You want to make sure you have let your employer know to allocate it properly. Okay, folks. Wow. What a great show for me anyway, because I love calls. I love questions. Let me answer your questions. So it was a fun show. It was a fast show. I appreciate all the help I had this tax season over the last couple months with all the guests that we had, Rod Young helping for several of the shows and Jackie and the attorneys, Buddy Lesavoy. I think we had Dennis Pappas in. I'm trying to think who else. Anyway, Judy Harris, lots of attorneys, thank you so much for helping during this period. And we're going to have a couple weeks break next week. We're going to have our fund drive. I hope to call in and give my challenge, Neil, my typical challenge, as if I was here, because I would be here if I was available. So I hope everyone calls in and says, your financial choices we're giving because we enjoy this show and want to keep WDIY here for a very long time. So that'll be good. So I will be coming back on April 29th. So we'll have probably a pre-recorded show on April 22nd, April 29th. I'll come back and I think I'll have a show talking about what we're going to do over the next couple months, talking about financial planning and different areas that we want to cover to help you continue to make good financial choices. I want to thank everyone tonight for calling in. I really appreciate the listeners. And thank Neil for being here, Judy Ann for being here. Coming up next is Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.
The time is 7 o'clock. This is WDIY Allentown, 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. Serving the Lehigh Valley at 88.1 FM, Allentown, Bethlehem, and at 93.9 East in Phillipsburg and 93.7 in Fogelsville and Trexlertown. Coming up next is, indeed, In the Tradition after NPR News headlines. Coming your way at 7:01. Current temperature, 41 degrees. Cloudy skies, rain and drizzle in the Lehigh Valley. Time is coming up on 7:01.